This is ESPN Radio.
We haven't even tipped off in the NBA, and already we're getting nice and mid-season messy. And that's just the start of it. Kenny Angolik Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty here with you guys, reminding you to also be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation. On the Dr. Pepper call-in line, hit us up at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's back, and so are the fans. So return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. And we got some great guests that are coming by today. June Lee going to break down some Major League Baseball with us in the next half hour. Jason Reed going to stop by, as well as the boss, Rick Ross, going to stop by in a little bit here. Chris, this is just like when Chene was on the show. I am thoroughly outclassed in my Rick Ross grunt here.
Yeah, you know I got you, though, Gojo. I'm going to hold you down. But I was just reading through the notes around his new book that he's promoting. We got to get into some of those topics, man. Some of those chapters in that book are fascinating. Got to rap with Rick Ross about that stuff. And we also got to talk about what's going on with his Miami Dolphins, because it's looking ugly right now in South Florida.
Yeah, we gotta take the temperature down there in South Florida and check in on some things in here. We'll do that. We'll take the temperature on what's going on. We mentioned the Brooklyn Nets as well. Chris, I don't know if you saw Stephen A. And our friend Jay Will getting into it today a little bit on First Take on that regard, debating Kyrie Irving and his decision-making here.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a little spicy. I mean, you said it in the intro, right? It's getting messy, and the NBA hadn't even tipped off the regular season. But just so everybody is clear out there, I am all here for all of it. I love the storylines. It's fascinating to me to be talking about an NBA season and LeBron James not really be the headline as we go into the season. Right now, it's all about Kyrie Irving, and it's all about Ben Simmons, and I'm interested to see where all of it goes.
We've got plenty of time to get to that, and we will here on Canty and Golic Jr., but right now we've got to get into what's continued to pour out of the NFL in the last couple of days, really, since John Gruden stepped down during Monday Night Football, leaving his post as the Las Vegas Raiders head coach. We know that was the result of emails that had poured out, spanning from an investigation into the Washington football team. Well, we thought that might have been the tip of the iceberg. Now the NFL Players Association would like to see the rest of it. The NFLPA said Tuesday that it plans to request that the NFL release the remainder of the 650,000 emails reviewed as a part of that investigation. And Chris, this is kind of becoming the confusing part of all this now, because we wondered where this leak came from. Who had the axe to grind with John Gruden or anyone else for this to be the only thing that came out here? And whoever that is, either apparently did not care about the NFL, was not operating from that portion of things in this leak, or was a little bit short-sighted in what they did, because I don't think this is going to end before someone's able to pry these emails open.
I think the latter is far more likely than the former, right? It's hard to envision that this material information leak came from anybody outside of the NFL, because I'm sure it didn't come from the Washington football team. Because if you go down that slippery slope, you're probably going to implicate the owner or some other officials that are higher up within that organization. And we know that this is not something that the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal dug up on their own. Nobody's going dumpster diving for information when it comes to these types of investigations. And you don't think it came from Beth Wilkerson and her firm, because if that was the case, then there's a liability issue that she has to deal with. So to me, when you go through the process of elimination, this had to have come from the NFL side of things. The only question is, who had that agenda and what was their motivation? And I don't know that that's ever going to be something that we get the answer to. But as far as the NFLPA and their call for transparency, good luck with that. I mean, they can want whatever they want. People in hell want ice water. Don't mean they're going to get it. I don't think the NFLPA is going to get that transparency. But the calls for all of the information surrounding this investigation are going to continue to get amplified, and I'm not sure how the NFL pours cold water on this thing.
No, and you know what else is going to be interesting now as we see more and more reaction from the Raiders organization is who's feeling some type of way and what's going to motivate whatever happens next, because we saw Vegas Raiders owner Mark Davis broke his silence, and I put that in kind of like italics and quotes here because it's hardly a break in silence. He told ESPN, "I have no comment. Ask the NFL. They have all the answers," when asked about John Gruden's resignation here. And number one on this, Chris, that's a bit of BS just for this to be the first thing that we are hearing largely from the owner. 3 days after they put three players out in a post-game press conference after the Raiders game this weekend, who had to answer questions about this, and David Carr, Yannick Ngakoue, and Josh Jacobs, their running back. So you're going to put the players in that spot to have to answer questions publicly about this as information still pouring out. But the owner of the team, 3 days later, can only muster up no comment and some clearly passive-aggressive shade thrown at the NFL. That smells foul to me.
It is foul, but it's interesting that Mark Davis says no comment and then goes on to comment about it, saying that you need to ask the NFL, they have all the answers. Like, it's surprising to me that even after all of the information that was leaked, all of the emails, all of the stuff that paints John Gruden in a horrible light, the owner still has some level of allegiance to him. It's clear that this is not something that he wanted to happen. Like, he didn't want John Gruden to resign as the head coach, and he didn't want to be put in a position where he had to force him out of the door. But apparently there are some powers that be within the NFL, within the league office, that decided that this was going to happen. And until it did, they were going to keep leaking information about John Gruden that was going to embarrass the franchise, going to embarrass the Shield. So, again, when it comes down to it, it's clear that the owner from the Raiders didn't want any parts of this, and this was something that the NFL or somebody in the NFL circles that had access to the investigative report and the information that came out of it decided that they were going to do. But, like, that's surprising to me from Mark Davis for him to take that tone, because clearly he should have a little more contrition based on what happened in the person that was the face of his franchise embarrassing his franchise the way that John Gruden did.
Yeah, I think that's the most surprising part to me, Chris, because we've seen with this organization, it is not without missteps. Go back to last summer and the I Can Breathe tweet that lived on that Twitter account for far too long.
So bad.
It still makes me cringe thinking about it. But, Chris, I've talked a lot to Jason Fitz, who is a great job here as ESPN Radio co-host of Spain and Fitz right after us. And we know we've had him around here, noted Raiders fan, who's talked about Mark Davis and what he's done in the Vegas community, the things he's tried to do materially in a way that helps. And so you get credit for that good. But we talked about this relative to John Gruden, how when he came out, he missed the mark in the way that he approached this at the beginning. There was probably nothing that was going to salvage his position once this all came out, but we know his first step was a misstep. For Mark Davis and an organization and a league who have tried to come out here and be faces for more inclusion and for diversity, for Mark Davis to not take this opportunity to echo a lot of those things and to just then again say no comment shows you where his priorities are, right? His slights are the ones that matters in this situation, not the slights of the people around the organization inside his own walls. I mean, we'll get to that. I mean, I think I saw Carl Nassib took a personal day today. There's not a lot of reporting as to why, but we know Carl Nassib, for anyone missed, the first openly gay NFL player on an active roster. You've got that going on inside your buildings. You have got black men on this team inside your building. And I don't know how you've addressed it there, but again, what you project outward, Chris, is no comment, ask the NFL, they have all the answers. Like, that doesn't jive with someone who is, on other instances, tried to claim that they're about all the words they say.
No, this is much too important of an issue for the owner to punt on it, right? I mean, Mark Davis is the one that signs all of the checks for the employees of that organization. So when it comes to the Raiders in their position, like, he had to come out with a stronger statement and a stronger stance against some of the attitudes that John Gruden displayed in those emails that were dumped. So I'm surprised that he didn't have a different statement that he put out there, and I'm surprised that he wasn't more proactive in trying to get in front of some of the stuff that he knew had to be coming down the pike when you saw the initial news dump last Friday. Like, when you saw that initial email that John Gruden had where he said that DeMaurice's lips looked like Michelin tires, like, you knew at that point that this was going to get bad. And for you not to make the decision to force a resignation or to come out with a statement and make John Gruden come out with a statement other than what he said, like, that was a misstep for me. So, like, there's plenty of blame to grow around when it comes to this particular situation. And they got John Gruden, who is the main culprit in all of this. But they also need to go out and look at the Las Vegas Raiders and the statements that they made, because it took way too long. You're talking about 72 hours from what happened on Friday to when John Gruden resigned on Monday. That's way too much time for the Raiders not to have a stronger stance against what John Gruden said in those emails.
You mentioned, Chris, the original comments that we saw, the emails with John Gruden disparaging DeMaurice Smith, the head of the NFLPA, We will hear a response. Damaris Smith joined Bomani Jones on the Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast earlier today. We have got the comments from D. Smith talking about John Gruden, what he heard, and more. We will get to those comments here in about 30 seconds. We'll do that after this word from Indeed. When you have your own business, you basically have to do everything. That includes hiring, which can become a second job. That's why there's Indeed, the all-in-one hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in one place. With smart tools like Instant Match, you instantly get a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description the minute you sponsor a post. Spend less time sifting through resumes and more time saying you're hired. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
John Gruden, out as Las Vegas Raiders head coach.
So let this be a lesson to a lot of people out there. What's done in the dark eventually comes to the light.
He's a bad guy. He's a bad person. I can't call him a racist. I can't call him that, but I know what you used.
Kanty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And so again, while we talked about the NFLPA petitioning the NFL to release the rest of the 650,000 emails pertaining to the investigation into the Washington football team that led us to this point with John Gruden, there's still fallout from the people involved in all this. And again, Damaris Smith, who's the head of the NFLPA, join Bomani Jones. You can check out the Right Time with Bomani Jones wherever you get your podcast for the entirety of the interview. But this was the part where they addressed John Gruden reaching out to D. Smith.
This particular situation, the reports have been that John Gruden has reached out to you. Are those true?
He did. And you know, I texted John back after he called on Saturday. I texted him and said, hey, I know you've got a game to coach. Let's get in touch later on in the week. That was before Monday. At some point, I'm sure we'll talk.
It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And so, Chris, at least on that front right now, it seems like the timelines may take a little bit longer to match up, because now, in addition to this being something that's personal for D. Smith, he's also got his responsibilities with the PA, who is trying to go even further on this. A really tough spot for him right now.
No, tough spot for D to be in, no doubt about it. And he's got his personal feelings surrounding what John Gruden said in those emails. But I got to give credit to him for having some level of awareness and being considerate of John Gruden in the position that he's in as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, knowing the responsibilities that he has ahead of Sunday. Just letting him focus his mental energy on doing that rather than an apology or a mea culpa that he was going to give to D and what was always going to be an emotional conversation. So I want to give credit to D for having that level of awareness. But, yeah, spinning this thing forward, I mean, even with the conversation that Gruden's going to have with the executive director of the union, like, there's still not going to be a place for him when it comes to pro football. And I feel like this could have been handled in a way much differently, where he at least has an avenue back to the game. But right now, as I see it, like, this is the end of John Gruden in the National Football League. He's radioactive at this point. There's nobody that's going to touch him in the foreseeable future.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Totally with you on that, Chris, by the way. That is it for John Gruden. If there was any hope of salvaging a career for him, it was going to have to come long before we saw him offend basically every group of people humanly possible in this. I want to continue to spin this forward because we're just getting this sound in right now. Again, Damaris Smith was on the podcast with Bomani Jones earlier this afternoon, so you're getting to hear some of this first. You can hear the entire interview on Bo's podcast, but this was D. Smith commenting on the NFL releasing the emails, again, that fight that the NFLPA is now engaged in.
I have less of a concern, honestly, about this being directed at just the Washington football team stuff. What I'm interested in is there correspondence that suggests that teams are making decisions about coaches based on the color of their skin? Are they actively hostile to players who have chosen to self-identify in various ways? are they denigrating, you know, people based on sexual preference or religious identity?
So, Chris, that's one of the other things that probably went a little bit under talked about through the first round of this, as John Gruden's emails poured out, where he, in addition to insulting Demoris Smith, using racially charged language, and also mocking the commissioner in the ways that he did, he was also critical of women becoming, you know, women in their roles as referees in the NFL, was critical of the loss, or the, at the time, St. Louis Rams, and what he described as being pressured to draft Michael Sam, one of the first openly gay players, the first openly gay player to enter into the NFL draft. This is now venturing into, all right, that was one person with power to potentially sway decision-making. Again, not at that time, because John Gruden was working for ESPN then, but entering back into the NFL, someone in a position of power with these kind of viewpoints. Having hate in your heart is one thing, but using those kind of words, voicing those kind of opinions, when you're someone that can affect other people's livelihoods, that is something that as a union, they have got to be deeply concerned about.
Yeah, and looking at the flip side of it, feeling comfortable enough to put that in an email to another team executive.
Yep.
So there's got to be some huge concerns about these negative attitudes toward marginalized groups being held by people that are higher-ups within the organizations around the National Football League. And I think that's the overarching issue that D is trying to touch on with that interview with Bomani. And so, yeah, you have to have some real concerns about it, because these attitudes are more pervasive than we actually even know. And so, you know, this should have been something that was apparent to us with the way the league initially handled the Colin Kaepernick issue. But I think this just kind of reiterates the point that the NFL has a long way to go when it comes to diversity and inclusion in a meaningful way. Like, we've seen that they've had the slogans, we've seen the PSAs, but actually hiring people within these organizations in top spots, well, positions that have real decision-making power, like, that's the thing that the NFL needs to turn the page on and move closer towards. Otherwise, it's going to be more of the same, being able to give an ode to, you know, equality in a celebratory way, but not necessarily in a meaningful way. And that's the part where, you know, the lack of transparency with the report and the 650,000-plus emails, you know, it starts to, you know, create a level of skepticism.
More from Demoris Smith on the podcast with Bomani Jones, talking about those 650,000 unreleased emails.
I'm not so much interested in just, I want to know about Washington football. I'm not. I think it would be good for our game and for our business, for both the league and the union, to decide that we're going to turn a corner. And we've talked about diversity. We've talked about inclusiveness for years. How do we turn the corner and actually match our actions to our words? And when will we start to hold people accountable for living up to a standard that we believe is the acceptable standard for just human interaction?
And Chris, so you were spot on. D. Smith pointing out that we've had a lot of words before, but you mentioned the response to Colin Kaepernick. So much of what was going on there was us inferring. We didn't know what was being said or going on in these rooms. This, I think D and the rest of the PA view as an opportunity to get in writing some of the things they've always believed that were going on and being said and done in those rooms.
Well, listen, players in the locker room has been talking about this for decades, Mike. I mean, this has been a feeling that a lot of players have, you know, felt in terms of the attitudes of front office executives toward the actual people that played the game, or people being involved from marginalized communities in the growth and the trajectory of the game. It's always been the good old boys club. And we have that conversation around every coaching hiring cycle, around every time, you know, teams are looking for general managers. Like, we always have these conversations and we wonder why more minority candidates aren't considered for these top positions to be faces of these franchises. And now with these attitudes kind of coming to the surface in the form of all of these emails, I mean, I think we're starting to get some insight as to why, you know, the change that we're looking for when it comes to equality, when it comes to diversity, when it comes to is taking so long from our perspective. It's because a lot of the people that are within these organizations that have the power to make these decisions haven't necessarily come around, haven't necessarily changed their attitudes toward those minority candidates.
Yeah, I got a tweet from someone that said, as a reminder, these were conversations that John Gruden was having. Someone else was answering on the other side of these, and that is what the NFLPA wants to know now. So again, the PA petitioning the NFL to release more of these emails. We will get much more into the comments from Demoris Smith, the head of the NFLPA, who was mentioned directly, insulted directly by John Gruden, and joined Bomani Jones on The Right Time with Bomani Jones. You can catch the entire interview there. We will get to more of that. Coming up next, though, we will switch gears and check in on Major League Baseball's postseason run, continuing with June Lee, our ESPN MLB writer, next on ESPN Radio.
Bart and Han.
A 10-1 bludgeoning of the White Sox in Game 4, and the Houston Astros will play for the American League pennant, and the Astros are off to the ALCS for the fifth consecutive season.
The road to the World Series goes through ESPN Radio. Catch all the postseason action presented by AutoZone on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Dodgers and Giants Game 5 coverage will begin on ESPN Radio at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty here on Canty and Golic Jr. That's coming up Thursday, by the way, I should say, here on ESPN Radio. Now, we will get to some things going on in the NBA. I think the defining quote of the beginning of the NBA season that we will get to coming up in a little bit. But we got a ton of baseball to react to, so we got to head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to our friend June Lee, who joins us now. ESPN writer, does a great job covering Major League Baseball. And June, it's been an exciting one, and as some things maybe change, we have a lot of things staying the same as we look who's moving on. The Astros now heading to their fifth consecutive ALCS after a win yesterday here. How does this team keep managing to pull this off?
I think you just have to give it up to the talent on the team, because as much as people love talking about the trash can banging and the scandal and the tabloid fodder of all of that stuff, the Astros are really, really good. Like, even after losing George Springer, who is a part of that core, they still have Alex Bregman, they still have Carlos Correa, they still have Lance McCullers. They have a really, really talented team, and I think something that got lost amidst all the discourse around the trash can scandal was that this is still one of the most talented rosters in baseball. I think because of the stigma around all that stuff, people tend to overlook the fact that, like, Jose Altuve is still Jose Altuve. Yuli Gurriel is really, really good still. Michael Brantley is really good. Like, even after Justin Verlander, they are back in the ALCS, and that this is one of the most talented teams in the sport, despite all the stigma around them and everything that's happened the last couple of years.
June, let's hit on the other team that advanced to the CS yesterday. The Braves took care of business against the Brewers in Game 4. Series doesn't even go back to Milwaukee. Walk us through how the Braves were able to overcome all the adversity that this team has faced this season. Because you're talking about Soroka re-tearing his Achilles. You had Acuña Jr. tear his ACL. Like, you've had a lot of flux with this team, a lot of up and down, and yet we're talking about them going to the National League Championship Series. How'd they get this done?
I mean, they basically rebuilt their outfield. I mean, Bradford Doolittle had a really good piece on ESPN.com a couple days ago, or I think it was this morning, where he was talking about how the Braves, even without Ronald Acuña, have been able to, piece together their depth to kind of make up for the fact that they haven't been, they haven't had their best player. I mean, the big place that the Braves have struggled with throughout the course of the season has been that starting pitching, and you're seeing guys like Max Fried really, really come through this postseason and look like himself. The pitcher that he looked like last year, where he was one of the best pitchers in the sport, and it's really kind of contributed to the fact that this team has had a lot of depth. I mean, Jorge Soler come through. Freddie Freeman has still been Freddie Freeman, the leader of that team. I think the story of a lot of these teams that have made it this far is that, even with injuries, even with kind of the struggles that they've been through, the depth has ultimately come through for them. And ultimately, I think year after year, and this is, not the sexiest thing about baseball, but the depth is often what kind of brings teams through in the postseason when injuries come, injuries happen. When over the course of 162 games, so many guys get injured that the teams that are able to hold it together throughout the end of the season because of their depth are often the ones that find themselves furthest in the postseason.
Kane Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to June Lee on the Goodyear Hotline. And let's go to one of the things that is sexy because we've got fans back in the stands for all these games here. And I saw you did a great piece on the Boston Red Sox and the environment at Fenway that has helped in part carry them in their series past the Tampa Bay Rays. So what stuck out? Because you mentioned people around this organization, one that's got a storied history of both fans and great teams, thinking this postseason's really standing apart so far.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Chaim Bloom, who's the chief baseball officer of the Red Sox, and he's a relative newcomer to Boston, you know, was hired before last season to replace Dave Dombrowski. And he said that over the course of the last couple of weeks, that people within the Red Sox organization who have been there for decades are telling him that this crowd is exceptional. I mean, I was at the 2018 World Series, and I've been at the games, the wild card game with the Yankees, and I was at Fenway for the games against the Rays. And the games against the Rays and the Yankees last week or so, the crowd has just completely exceeded even the 2018 World Series crowd. The level of engagement, the way that they are willing to taunt people in a way that I think is relative fun and you know, is great in a sports fan kind of way. But they've been standing on their feet for large portions of the game across the board. Like this the crowds at Fenway Park are making a difference right now. I mean, I've talked to players after on the field who are saying that because the fans are so engaged right now, it's giving them an extra boost of energy, especially after a season where there were no fans at all in the crowds. And I think Fenway's always provided a little bit of a home field advantage because of how engaged baseball crowds are at Fenway. I think in a way that's very exceptional to most of baseball and in sports as a whole. But they've kind of taken it to another level this postseason.
June, as a Yankees fan, I hope both teams lose this series. I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there. But with three of the four CS teams set, I got to ask you about who's going to round out the field. We got game five between the Dodgers and the Giants. These two teams have been at it all season in the NL West. Who ends up winning game five and advancing?
Oh, man. I mean, I chose the Giants, so I'm going to stick to that pick before. I chose them before the series, so I'm going to stick to the Giants. But I'm really, really excited to see the result of this game tonight because, I mean, I think that these are the two best teams in baseball. And they've arrived at this point in such different ways. The Dodgers, I think, have one of the most talented on paper rosters in the history of the sport this year. And the Giants very much do not have that. And so the fact that they are, the two teams both won 107, 106 games this year and are in this position, I think is almost a little bit of a waste that we're getting in the ALDS. But, I'm just really, really excited to see. We're going to have an incredible baseball game tonight, I think, between these two teams.
It's a real don't smile because it's going to be – or don't cry because it's going to be over, smile because it happened at all here. I was going to get that right eventually.
Exactly.
Follow him on Twitter, at June Lee, and read him on ESPN.com. Again, a great article about those Boston Red Sox crowds that have helped carry them through their first series here. June, we appreciate the time, buddy. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, guys, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Awesome stuff. Reminder, you can catch Dodgers Giants, the NLDS Game 5 coverage on ESPN Radio coming up Thursday, 8:30 Eastern, starting here. Catch all of that tomorrow. But coming up next here, you can catch what I think is the quote that defines exactly what the start of the NBA season should be about. We will tell you who said what after this word from Barbasol. Now, in 1919, Barbasol introduced the very first no brush, no lather, no rub-in shaving cream. Today, we celebrate this milestone with a fresh take on the original. Introducing Barbasol 1919 Classic Shaving Cream, a culmination of over 100 years of shaving excellence. This new non-aerosol shaving cream is fortified with aloe, coconut oil, and shea butter to soothe and protect your skin. You pair that with a fresh and calming fragrance, this ultra-slick formula delivers a shave experience like no other. Learn more about it at Barbasol.com. Why Russell Westbrook is already off to a picture-perfect start, in my mind, for the Los Angeles Lakers, next on ESPN Radio.
Bart and Han.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And we want to hear from you, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. On the Dr. Pepper call-in line, for anyone that's not on Twitter, there's been one of those trends going around where people are red flagging things. Apparently anything that they deem suspect here, putting a bunch of red flag emojis after the fact. And we want to hear your sports red flags, the thing that you think is foul, the thing that you think is suspect in here. Chris, you brought up maybe the best and I think most understandable example for all of humanity earlier in the show.
Yeah, people that don't like bacon. Yep. Like, I got to put a red flag on them. I can't trust folks that don't like bacon. It's way too good not to like it, to deprive yourself of the opportunity to indulge. So if you don't like bacon, it's going to be hard for me to trust you. That's just where I'm at with it.
Chris, I would say damn near impossible. Like, unless you've got some sort of, like, religious reason or anything like that, or, like, a legitimate allergy here, I've got to look and say, if it is just on taste and preference alone, I'm calling 911 in my pocket. Like, I'm assuming you're going to commit a crime after that.
Yeah, I mean, you're a threat to society. Like, we have to keep close eye, keep close watch on you, because you're liable to do anything if you don't like bacon.
Cliff, you have a vendetta against straws, right?
Hey, paper straws specifically. Yeah. Listen, I tried to get my coffee this morning before I came to work, get energized, get ready to go. I go up to the counter down here with the lovely people that work here. Everybody here is great.
Shout out
to
the calf.
My guy James, my guy Damaris. I get my coffee, right? And then you know how you hit the straw, you hit it on the table. It's a paper straw. I'm like, yo, what is this? What am I going to do with this paper straw? It was like, we're trying to save the turtles. I'm like, listen, man,
first of all, we want to save the turtles. We are a pro-turtle show around here, regardless of what Cliff is saying. Canty and Golic Jr., we are pro-turtles. We love them, boys.
Listen, I want to be a voice for the voiceless in this scenario right here. Paper straws are a no-go. That is the ultimate red flag. I can't rock with you if you do the paper straw thing. I'm sorry. Listen, I care about the turtles, but I care more about having a plastic straw. Sorry.
Voice for the voiceless, but no turtle. Yeah, no, get the turtles
out
of here.
Turtles can't talk. They are voiceless.
The turtle's going to really get hurt by a plastic straw.
You don't know that.
I do know that.
We got to do our part here. By the way, put everyone game, metal straws. Save you all of the issues with having to throw away straws. And all the issues, because I'm with you, paper straws, textural nightmare. We can find a better way. That way is metal. If there's some environmental thing with metal, I apologize. I'm too dumb to keep track of all this stuff at some point in time. But again, your sports red flags, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I want to get to whatever the opposite of a red flag is here, Chris, because as we're getting ready to start the NBA season, Russell Westbrook is going to be a subject of a lot of discussion. New guard for the Los Angeles Lakers, comes over as a part of that team this offseason. This was Russ talking about, and this is the energy I want to keep right now as we get ready to start the NBA season. Russell Westbrook talking about turnovers in the preseason.
Is your turnover total any sort of indicator on that there is a learning process you're going through? And what's it been like for you to pick up Frank's offensive system?
Oh, it's fine. This is not the turnover stuff. It's on me. But good thing they don't count. So I turned that over 15 times. I might do nothing about it.
I love him so much, Chris. This has given me the confidence I need to pick the Lakers to finish first in the West this year. There's no other thing I need at this point.
Well, listen, Gojo, you know I'm rolling with the Lake Show. That's my team. So I want them to finish first in the Western Conference. And we realized after what happened last year in the playoffs that seeding actually matters when it comes to the more competitive of the two conferences. So, yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about what this is going to look like early just because they got so many new parts on that team and they're going to be dealing with so many guys that are out with injuries early. Like Trevor Ariza is going to miss the first couple of months. Talen Horton-Tucker is going to miss, you know, about a month with the thumb surgery. Kendrick Nunn and Wayne Ellington have yet to play. Like Malik Monk, you know, he's another guy that they're going to use in the rotation. He's going to be out for another week. So, like, with all of the injuries that they're dealing with early on, like, I'm a little bit concerned about them being able to find their rhythm and find the roles that guys are going to play within the rotation. And when LeBron James and Russell Westbrook are out on the court specifically, what that looks like in terms of who the primary ball handler is, who's going to facilitate the offense. Because the Lakers have made it clear they want to get out and run a little bit more in transition. They have been a little bit of a slower paced team on the offensive side. And to keep up in the Western Conference with some of the offenses that they're going to be going up against, they got to start getting up and down the court a little bit better than they have. So that is the concern that I have early on, what it looks like early. as it pertains to their seeding in the Western Conference when it comes time for the playoffs.
Lots of time to address any of the questions around the Los Angeles Lakers as they head into the 2021-2022 season. But coming up next, have you ever wanted to build your own empire? Have you ever wanted to boss up? Thankfully, we have Rick Ross coming by to tell you how to do just that.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Bart and Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN Plus. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.